Hello and welcome to episode number 55 of Investing from the Beach. I'm your host. I'm Chris Hansen. I got my co-host with me today, Mr. Chris Lamb.
Hey there, it's Chris Lamb here. How can I beat that enthusiasm?
We've been telling off-color jokes prior to starting it that, let's just start recording and we'll catch us in the middle laughing at one another as we do this. If it's your first time to the show, first-time listener, quick background on the two of us. We both hit time freedom at a young age. Chris is much smarter than I am. He got there at about age 30. I'm not quite as bright. I got there at age 40. We're about 20 years apart. We both worked at IBM, both in sales. And we met there. He was coming in as a college intern. We overlapped by probably a couple years. And he was, as he was coming in, trying to, after he'd been there a little bit, trying to lock himself into a job, I was trying to figure out how to unlock myself and get the hell out. But we developed very early on, we realized we had a shared interest in the stock market and have had numerous conversations over the years about that, developed an incredible friendship for which I'm always thankful. And as I said, I was walking out the door as he was walking in. It took him about another 8 to 10 years after I left.
And you know, you kind of had that that look like when you left, you know, like, oh man, I'm glad I'm not you.
Well, if you listen to the last episode, it's because you were just an intern.
But we've getting ready to go full time prison.
Right? Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You know, it's jail with a door. You choose to go in there, but you were going in looking for a cell, and I was tickled that the warden let me go. But
I didn't know, but I don't know if you knew at the time. So, but you kind of looked at me kind of like, oh man, you felt sorry for me.
No. It's a good place to work. You learned a lot. It was okay. Had it been other places, maybe not so much. But the good thing is you got out of less than, you got about 10 years or so. But we've had countless discussions over the years about what it took to get to time freedom, what it takes to get to time freedom, and what it takes to not just obtain time freedom, but to maintain that time freedom. And we both came to the realization that it is not about the cookbook, the rules, the mechanics. It's not at all about the how to do. That's maybe 5% of this. The bulk of what it takes is the 95%, which is how to think. We've got a mutual friend who's a podcast producer. He sat down with me a couple years ago and he said, you and Lamb have got a great message that nobody else talks about with regard to how to, with regard to doing this, along the lines of not only time freedom, because nobody talks about that, they talk about financial freedom. There's a big difference. And we also talk about the how to think. And so at his suggestion and behest, we started creating a podcast, and here we are today at episode number 55. Anything else to add there? See, I'm trying to change the intro for those that give us grief and say, it's the same thing. Like, no, make it a little bit different.
Yeah. Nothing to add.
We're good. You're like Charlie Munger. I concur.
Yeah, I concur.
So today's topic is initial public offering, IPO. We were kicking around ideas on what to talk about. And with the, I prefer not to talk dates on these. So if somebody's listening to this thing 6 months or a year after the fact, it's still timely for them. And I think the industry term is evergreen. So you don't want something that is date specific. See, Chris, there's a few things I learned about podcasting, and you know, my list is really, really short. So if you ask me four other questions, I think that's as much as I know. But specifically, we're going to talk about IPO, but it really was triggered by some discussions going on in the last couple of days about a recent IPO for Lyft. And we thought, you know, we really should spend a little more time talking about this. We alluded to it in one of the earlier episodes, but it's probably more important to speak about it now, as I'm sure the questions are going to come up here in the next couple of weeks as we run into people and talk about the stock market.
So what we'll be talking about is it's not evergreen.
It is evergreen because we're not, okay. Yeah, because we're really it was
it's
driven
time stamp, but it's still evergreen.
It's definitely evergreen, but we may use a little example around the recent Lyft IPO.
All right, but when you said evergreen, I know we're on a podcast and you can't see my face, but it's like I just showed you it didn't care.
Yeah. So, but the idea is, and we're not speaking specifically about Lyft and how much it has been jumping around, but more so about the concept of putting your money into an IPO in the early stages as it is just going public. So maybe the first place to start what is to explain an IPO and the process in real simple, overly simplified terms. I think that's a good place to start.
And I think we did one an IPO episode also on was it maybe the 20th one?
I think so. Yeah, it was in the early.
But it's titled IPO. So yes. If you guys want to go back and get some more information, that's a good one too.
Take a look there. But the idea on, you know, a real simplified way to take a look at this. Somebody comes up with an idea for a company and they get it started. They may or may not need investors early on, but they develop the product, the concept, the idea as they want it to, or as they need more capital to grow. They may turn to friends and family to raise some money. As they run out of friends and family and money from friends and family, then they tend to look toward professional investors, venture capitalists, angel investors, that type of thing. Those folks could roll some money into the venture, and now they're going to have a small ownership stake or a large ownership stake of the business. As the business keeps on growing, at some point, the way that the early investors get their money out is to go public. The reason for going public is multifold. Typically, in my experience and opinion, it's usually in one of two reasons. One is that the organization needs to raise even more capital, and so they want to cut the company into a greater number of small pieces and sell it out to the public, and they use that raised capital for expansion and growth, whatever it may be, maybe even to pay down debt. And or it's a way for the early investors to cash out. I don't know that I've ever heard the prospectus for an IPO saying it's a way for the early money to get out. So it won't be stated that way, but kind of an unspoken opportunity for some of the early investors to cash out if it has been a successful
business. Because
it's
much tougher I think it's much tougher to get out, you know, trying to sell it privately, right?
Yes.
Especially at those prices.
And so in order to do that, in essence, the way oversimplified mechanics on this is the company will go out and they'll hire a number of an investment bank or a number of investment banks who will do a huge due diligence study to try and ascertain what they think the true value of the company really is or could or should be. And they look at all kinds of things. You know, what are the risks to the business? What's the current business outlook? What's the strength of the management team? They look at the books, you know, the balance sheet, the income statement, et cetera, et cetera. And the investment bank will come up with a guesstimated number on what they think the company will be worth. And they match that up with kind of, I won't say guesstimates, but kind of whisper numbers from what they might hear from the people that are willing to buy the shares.
Is that what you usually call the genuflex or whatever?
Genuflect?
Yeah. Is that what they do?
Genuflex sounds like a workout machine.
That's what I thought you said when you say those. Yeah.
No, genuflect.
Tell me how many times I've done that.
FLECT, genuflect. I think it's when you kneel. I may have been using the wrong term, the wrong word all these years. I always thought it's when you went into church, you kind of knelt down at the cross and you do the sign of the cross. Mm-hmm. As a religious statement,
but they do something like, you know, like the sign of the cross, and then they kiss, you know, the cross or something like that.
Correct.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah.
Clearly, we know where you're not spending your time on a Sunday. But so some of that is the investment bankers, and that they do genuflect to say, please, dear God, my gosh, my God, my whomever you, whoever you not report to. What's the right word? Whoever your religious symbol is, I'm trying to be way overly politically correct on that, but your God, and you ask your God to deliver a good value for you so that you can get your money out and then give a little bit at the altar as thanks for that. And so the company gives a bunch of shares to the investment bank whose job it is to sell it to the public. You turn on CNBC one morning and see the CEO and the founders of this company that's now going to be going public later on that day. They get up and they ring the opening bell at the New York Stock Exchange, and they're all excited. Then they come walking down to the floor and they're standing at the trading desk. And the ceremonial first trade of 100 shares is purchased by the CEO. And they come out at whatever price it is, and then shares start to trade. And there's a big rush. Everybody's happy and hooting and hollering. And the guys on CNBC will talk about it endlessly. Huge waste of time for hours.
Well, you know why? It's a party.
Yeah. And they get.
I would celebrate too if I were them.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Oh, got my money out.
Yeah. Free. Oh, yeah. Hooray. Definitely. Yeah. But now why the CNBC guys are celebrating about it, you know, or spending so much time talking about it, I've never understood.
Well, it's all media, right? Just to create
it's viewership.
Yeah.
But so now
some buzz.
Yeah. So in this example, and I'm not commenting on Lyft. This is not a statement about Lyft versus Uber or the whole industry. Just using this, and you can change the name Lyft to whatever company you want to put in. It's the same stuff. The idea now is that the company is trying to raise money from the public, and the public is you and me. It is you and me with our money in a mutual fund, in our 401k, in our state retirement fund, if you're working for a government agency, all kinds of places. And it's those fund managers, whether it's a hedge fund, a mutual fund, a pension fund, that is looking to move some of their dollars into this new organization, into this new ticker. And the stock price moves up and down, and people are all excited about it. The question.
Yeah. When we say raise, or when you say raise, it sounds like, you know, like they need money.
Yes.
You know, to run the business. It's like, no, they're actually not needing the money to run the business. They're just needing to raise the money so they can transfer the shares.
Yeah. Well,
that's
a transfer.
What they're raising the money for. Yeah.
And that money could be used to pay down debt. Mm-hmm. It could be used. Maybe there is a need for expansion. Who knows, right? Every story is going to be different. But what gets interesting is, I'm sure you get this as well, people have called me in the last couple of days saying, hey, what do you think? Should I buy some shares of Lyft? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a registered agent or a registered advisor. You're not a registered advisor.
Oh, you could do your disclaimer now.
Oh, that's true. I probably should.
It's perfect.
Yeah, this is true. So, by the way, neither Chris and I are both unemployed. I've been unemployed for about 15, 18 years, something like that. Just realized, Chris, you know, I've been out of work. I think next year will be as long as I did work once I got out of college.
All right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you've been what? So you're out?
I don't know. What? 7, 8 years, something like that.
Well, when you're 30, yeah. So 7, 8 years, something like that.
Yeah, so I'm going to hit 40 soon. Man.
You're close. I know. Stuff's going to start to hurt. So clearly you can see. If I haven't had a job in, you know, 15, 18 years and Chris is coming up on 10 years of being unemployed, clearly we have no right and we don't know what the hell we're talking about because we haven't had a job in, you know, a decade, almost 2 decades between us. And
I forgot the word job fair, remember?
Yeah, that's right. He didn't know it and he could not remember what a job fair was. But because of the fact that we haven't had a job in forever, clearly we do not know what the hell we're talking about or doing. And so anything that we mention, we're not giving advice, we're not soliciting your dollars, we're not telling you what to buy or what to sell. And because we don't have a clue, and so strongly suggest before you decide to take any kind of action, go talk to a registered financial advisor, someone who clearly knows what they're doing, who's been working at that field for, you know, years and years and years and years. Because if they've been working at it that long, clearly they must know what they're doing. And so by all rights and all means necessary, go talk to somebody who's informed, who's educated, and definitely who's employed and has a license.
Professional.
Yeah, exactly. Chris and I are neither, and we don't have a clue. So anything that we talk about is strictly meant to be educational and a little bit, hopefully, entertainment, but a lot more on the education side. But in all seriousness, go talk to a financial advisor who understands the risks in the investment that you're considering, because we do not, who understands your risk profile and how much risk you're willing to stomach, because we do not have any clue what your situation is. They understand your goals. We do not. And all those other things that are important to know about you and your personal situation.
I would even say talk to anyone else but us, you know, because they might talk to a financial advisor and might not have a good experience and blame you.
It's true. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Go talk to someone who knows what they're doing, because clearly we do not. All right. So there's enough of our disclaimer. And if you ever go read the small print on any financial document where it says, you know, risk or investing is risky, blah, 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 blah. We just said basically the same thing in non-legalese. But bottom line, in all seriousness, go talk to someone who knows what they're doing. This is just educate. This is just educate. What do you call it? Entertainment. Can't think of the right E word. All right. So now we covered our bacon or our backside. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, so the company goes public. Shares get sold. The first 100 shares are sold to the CEO. And the question will come up, and you'll hear it from people around the water cooler in the office. Hey, do you think, you know, are you going to buy shares in whatever the latest one's going to be? You know, so the last couple of days it's been Lyft. In the future, it's going to be Uber, and it'll be, I don't know, Grubhub and whoever. I can't even think of other firms that are going to, DoorDash will probably come out. Mm-hmm. Whoever else is going to go public. And your cohorts, your cubicle mates are going to say, so what do you think? Should we buy some? How much are you going to buy? What should we do? Our answer is always, man, I don't have a clue. And if they were to ask, are you going to buy any? I'd say, I don't have a clue. And if I did buy it, I certainly am not going to be holding it for the long term. I may trade it, you know, be in and out today, in and out in a day or two, but I'm not holding that thing for a long term at all. At this
point. Why not, man?
At this point.
It's a great deal. Everybody is talking about it.
That's great. Love to have them all talk about it.
Have you ever sat in a Lyft car?
No, I've taken an Uber. Maybe I have. I might have done a Lyft. I've got Uber on the phone. I don't know that I've ever done. If I was with somebody that did Lyft. Yeah, and the difference in quality, I have no clue. I have no idea. But have you done Lyft or Uber?
No, I never used Lyft. I've used Uber a few times.
Yeah. And see, some people go, how come you guys don't use Uber all the time? Or Lyft all the time? And the answer is, when you don't have to go to work.
You don't go anywhere.
You don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell do I need to do that for? Mm-hmm. Don't need to travel. We live in a place in the world or a spot on the globe where the rest of the world wants to come to. I don't need to get away. I don't live in a part of the city where you can't get around. Easily I can jump in my own car. It's very easy to do. Mm-hmm. So hasn't been a huge need to.
And sometimes you lift me. So.
Yep, I'll pick you up. And there's other times where you think, well, you know, what if you're going to go out and have a couple of drinks? Well, you let somebody else do the driving or somebody else to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Or you stay at home. So we're actually pretty boring. But with that, so Chris, the question becomes, so, you know, if ABC stock, I won't call it Lyft, it'll be whatever it is. It comes out public at, let's say, $100 a share. Mm-hmm. And a few days later, it's trading at 110 or it's trading at 90. At what point do you decide to buy?
Depends on what you're trying to do.
Okay.
Are you, you know, I mean, I think how I take a look at a stock is, you know, I either own it, I trade it, or I don't touch it.
And don't touch it means will you watch it or not even watching it?
I wouldn't even watch it. Yeah.
And so at this point on this on.
So for example of a Lyft, right?
Or we've been out for less than a week.
Yeah, does it meet a criteria of a company that I might own? Possibly, but not now.
And when you say own for how long?
Own meaning forever.
Okay.
Meaning I could put some dollars allocated towards it because. You know, I could see it being I think it's okay to have, you know, one company that is a
speculative.
Yeah, speculative, something that is, changing the industry, mm-hmm. right? Something that's very new, kind of like an Amazon back then.
Yep. So you're putting your hope on it, but you're not putting your retirement on it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So huge difference on that. Difference on that. He's putting it's almost like a Vegas trade.
Yeah.
In that, hey, you know, if it or, you know, it's like we recently just had a huge lottery win or a lotto win. Some guy won, I don't know, it was three quarter of a billion or whatever the huge number was. I'm certain you didn't buy a ticket. Am I correct?
Correct.
So I bought one and I did
it
when I was,
know about it. So.
Yeah. And I did it when I was at the gas station and the bill for the tank of gas was 38. And I was like, you know, I think I handed him $40 and he handed me the two. I thought, oh, you know what? Let me just buy a lottery ticket. So I used the $2 and I handed it to him. I said, just so you know, this is a donation to the education fund for the state of California. And there was somebody behind me in line and they were like, what?
It's like, nerd.
Yeah, geek. Yeah, I don't. I think he used a different four-letter word. and there was a D in it, but it didn't end in a D. But the gas station owner, I've been going there for years, so he knows me. Just kind of laughed and grabbed the money and put it away. But I just viewed it, and I should look and see. I don't think I've even looked to check the numbers. I think the winner was somewhere in the Midwest, so I know I didn't win, but I don't know if I got second place. So who knows, man? This could be our last podcast episode. Yeah. I might have a winner. We'll be done.
Yeah.
And people say, well, how'd you hit time freedom? It's like, oh, $2.
$2.
Got me tens or hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know there's no, please, nobody send me a note. I know there's not second place in a lottery.
Yeah, it's just a joke. I'm sure you'll still call me to do a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I certainly will. And I would never tell you that I won. That's one. Life would never change. You wouldn't see a difference. Mm-hmm. I might hire somebody to, what do you call it? Detail the car.
It's like, wow, you got an air freshener?
Actually, no, I got a driver. On? I get a driver for my car. That's what I just get the driver from our Toyota Corolla.
Did you get an inheritance or something?
Exactly. You spent $4. That's big, man. All right. Totally sidetracked. Oh, so you would buy you might buy something like this on a potentially the dream of a long-term jackpot.
Yeah, but you also have to, because I look at it from a different experience than, say, somebody who's never invested, right?
Correct.
When I look at Lyft as a business, and this is not advice or anything, I just kind of look at, how far reaching is this, and, will the type of business always be around? And I think I can see it. I see it going away.
It's a new taxi cab. It's not going away.
Yeah. And you got the number one, number two players in the U.S., right? So I figured it'll be around, and, you may not be buying it at a right price, but the business, I don't think it will go anywhere soon. So I look at it from that point, right? And as far as price movements and all that, I understand how to manage that.
And so along those lines, he's not saying that he would go out and buy the shares tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
It might take you 6 months to decide to buy.
Yeah. But usually, you want to be able to see where prices will stabilize, right? You got to understand that I think Chris earlier explained how that whole IPO process. And I think, IPOs were traditionally meant to be a way for companies to raise capital, like Chris said, to expand. But nowadays we have so many private money that's available. And so IPOs are now, to me, they seem to be more of a method of dumping shares, right? And often these shares are overhyped and overbought, and then they dump it to the public. And the public or the pension funds and all the other funds that hold the money of the public and the retail investors, right? And think about that. These funds are always buying, you think about your 401k dollars, right? For those of you guys that are putting automatic, investing right, into these funds.
Yeah, yeah. Contributions.
Contributions. They're going into these funds every paycheck. So, whether it's, middle of the month or end of the month, right, you're seeing it's on a regular basis. And so Wall Street is a fantastic dumping ground if you think about that. Because, if these companies are so valuable at these prices, then why are they selling them to the public?
Yes.
Yep. Right? They if it's valuable, they think, hey, it's going to go up a lot more. They're going to hold on to it. These guys, they want to make money with their money.
They're not dumb.
Yeah, they're not dumb. So if there's still a lot of potential of making money with this, they're going to stay in.
Yeah. Why would they be looking to unload now? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If this almost sounds like a conspiracy theory, don't think of it that way.
It's using logic, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, put yourself in their shoes. Think about why didn't they IPO and sell them to the Lyft to the public 5 years ago? When it probably makes much more sense for the public to buy, right, if you're the public. And again, it's because the shares were much more attractive 5 years ago at those prices that the early investors got in at.
To the public.
To the public.
Correct.
But again, they're not available to the public when the private money was investing. like, you know, there's companies like you heard of SpaceX.
Mm-hmm.
We can't get into SpaceX.
Correct.
Right? No one wants to sell it yet.
Yep.
You know, until, you know, the, hey, there's a good price for it now. Let's dump it.
Yeah, so it's on the proven side, or whatever proven means. But yeah, you could, if you wanted to buy into it today, you can't as an individual investor.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we weren't allowed the opportunity to buy Lyft when Lyft, you know, started, right?
Nope.
Why? Because these guys will go look for the hedge funds, the private money,
mm-hmm.
right, that will fund this. They're not going to go out and look for smaller investors with a few million dollars here and there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Chris, and again, this is not, if you notice what we're saying, neither one of us sounds greedy about wanting to go out and buy Lyft or whatever the latest IPO is. It doesn't, we use the word Lyft now just because they just came out, but we could have this discussion in 6 months when another two or three big firms IPO. It's going to be the same discussion, just a different date and a different ticker. Neither one of us is chomping at the bit wanting to go out and buy X number of shares or put a few dollars into the latest IPO, no matter how strongly we feel about it. You know, if Lyft truly is the, what's the word I'm looking for, an upset to the industry and probably not going away, I could see, like you're saying, I could see putting a couple dollars in there just kind of as a speculative play and see what'll happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, I think one thing you have to kind of look at is, you know, at the IPO price, you think the hedge fund managers, you know, these guys, you think they're going to rush out to buy?
Nope.
Right? In the open market. Right? they if they bought, they received them before the opening price. They received them before, you know, it got to $72, you know, the price that Lyft.
Yeah, they're on IPO. Pre-IPO.
Mm-hmm.
But so using Lyft then, so in the first couple of days, it IPO'd at 72, got as high as 88, 89, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of days later, it was down back around 70,
mm-hmm.
right? I think it was just 70, right? Just a little bit under the IPO price.
Yes, I'm right.
And so anybody that bought in, you know, from the IPO until a couple of days later is now upside down.
Mm-hmm.
Now think about that.
Yeah, it's sitting at its lowest.
So yeah. You bought in 2 days ago thinking this would be great, or 3 days ago, or however long you've been in it, and now you're upside down. In fact, everybody that bought in since the IPO is underwater. And you think, wait a minute, this company's supposed to be going through the roof. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Unless you have the ability to short it, but I don't think there are shares available.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying for everyone that bought, right, forgetting about the short side. Mm-hmm. And so a smarter, in our opinion, again, we're unemployed. We don't have any clue what the hell we're talking about. A smart way to think about this would be give it some period of time. And it's not a week. You know, it could be months, 3 to 6, 9 months, something like that. And watch the trading history of this. And who knows, this thing could run up to 140. Who knows, this thing could drop to 40. I have no idea. Nor does anybody else. But its price will be determined by institutions buying and selling the shares. And so if no one's buying, the price is going to drop. If no one's selling, the price is going to rise. If a lot of people are buying, the price will rise even faster. And if a lot of people are selling, the price will drop even faster. And so you give it some time to let it, I guess, shake out, for lack of a better word, and see where, based on a chart, where do people tend to step in and buy it? As you look at that with 3, 6, 9 months of history, you can see spots on the chart where it appears that for whatever reason, and we'll never know why, but somebody steps in and starts buying the shares, and the shares get supported at a certain price level. And it could be that it's X dollars per share, or it could be that it's some multiple on the priced earnings. Whatever the hell the reason is, we'll never know. All we know is that people step in and they start buying. And you can't hide that on a chart. It's very obvious to see.
Mm-hmm.
And so now once you know what those price levels are, now at least you have some comfort in saying, wow, when this stock gets down to X dollars per share, it seems that people step in and buy it. Why they buy it, I have no clue. I'll never know. But I can see on a chart that they do that. And so now I know if I see it back down on that level again, and now it starts to lift, and I want to own it, potentially I could look to buy it there. Again, we're not giving advice. We're just talking about a strategy and really just kind of a how to think.
Yeah, it's conceptually, right? Because, yep.
And that price could be higher than what it could be, a lot higher than what it is today. Mm-hmm. It could run to 120 tomorrow and then bounce between 130 and 110. And after what you say, oh, it's holding at 110, cool. Then you look to me and say, man, yeah, but I could have bought it at 70, you know.
Back. You wouldn't know that it could go to 40.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. That's exactly it.
Just like somebody who bought it at 88.
Right? Yep.
You know, Lyft, mm-hmm. for example.
Yeah, they didn't know it was going to drop back down to 70 a day or two or three later. Mm-hmm.
Why not buy it now?
Because I don't know if people are willing to buy.
It's not enough information yet.
Yeah, I have no idea if people are willing to buy at this price point. So I don't have any history to prove to that, yeah. or history to point to it, any past history. So that's why not to. And that works on any and every single IPO that's out there. Regardless of whether you like the prospects of the company, or if you just think, this is worthy of a trade, something you're going to be in for a short period of time. The concept is still the same. And people will say, well, what about the fundamentals? What about? Like, personally, I would say, screw that. Whatever the reason is that someone is buying is fine. They can come up with whatever rationale they want to give me. And they'll talk about it till they're blue in the face on CNBC. All that is pure crap. Because all I'm watching for is when a bunch of big money steps in and says, let's buy now. Mm-hmm. And the price starts to lift.
Oh, you forget to talk about the whole roadshow that...
IPO show?
Yeah. That the investment bankers go on and promote, right?
Go ahead.
The shares of the ABC. company that's going to be launched, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to hear all these buzz around this company through, you know, papers, through the internet, through, you know, television, all sorts of media, people hyping up, so you'll hear it definitely in Wall Street. And so the pros and the fund managers, they know that, right? But the public gets so excited about it. Everybody talks about it and they want to buy. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you want to be different, you want to kind of sit back and think a little bit, give it a little time. And I think the important part of let's take a step back and remember the operating system and app analogy. And this IPO thing is an app, right? And so as you're learning or building your stock market system, you got to include an app that handles IPOs. Otherwise, you will get this buzz coming at you, and you won't know how to handle it.
It's all emotion. Yeah. It is all emotion. Mm-hmm. And if you do, hypothetically, let's say you bought in now. So you buy in at this price that is now under the offering price. How do you know when to sell? Do you sell when you make a dollar? Do you sell when you make 10? Mm-hmm. Do you sell when you lose a dollar? Do you sell when you lose 10? How do you, don't have any idea where this thing could potentially run to one way or the other. And so you're just making not even a scientific wild ass guess. It truly is just a wild ass guess on where you might look to get out.
Yeah, that's why you have to have a plan and a system in place.
And that's gambling. That's totally gambling.
Yep.
And so, yeah, you hit it right on the nose. So when you look to buy, you buy it intelligently, mm-hmm. and you've got to have an intelligent exit point. And then it's just a matter of just following your plan as you go through this.
Yeah.
And that usually is the hardest part for people to stick to because it's all driven by emotions.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're going to have many more IPOs, not just this year, but the upcoming years, right? Oh, yeah.
They're always going to come out.
And they're going to try to make it even more and more appealing to you, mm-hmm. if you open your ears to them. But the system and having an understanding of how you would approach it in place, when you have that in place, it's going to help you avoid making stupid decisions, right, or emotional decisions that will cost you.
The other thing that people will come back at is they'll say, well, wait, I could have bought, Facebook went public at 30. mm-hmm. thereabouts, and it dropped to 20, and now it's up at whatever it's at. Mm-hmm. So, gosh, I could have bought it down in the 20s, and now it's up north of 100, and I'd have made 5, 6, 7-fold on my money.
Sure.
Right? X number of years. Yeah.
Could have. Exactly.
Could have, would have, should have. I also could have bought, you know, real estate in the San Fernando Valley back in the early 80s for $35,000 and now be worth $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know.
How about all the other IPOs that we don't talk about that you could have bought and,
that are now
and,
gone
and lost everything? Yeah.
Atari.
And at the same time, if you bought, you know, Facebook IPO at 30
mm-hmm.
and then it went to 60, you think you would have sold it or kept it still?
Exactly. Would you, would you have been able to have the stomach to hang on after 100% gain?
Yeah. Go, oh, well, of course, it went from 30 to 60, it's going to go more. Yeah, but right. when it goes from 60 to 50, you're going to get
Now you're going to get scared. And, you're going to blow out.
You're going to sell.
So here's a different way to think about this. Chris, when you've seen a stock, it's at 30, and not an IPO, but something that's been out for a while,
mm-hmm.
and it runs to 40.
Yep.
Have you ever done one, been in one, and out of one where in that $10 move, you make more than $10.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right? And all it is it rises a bit, you sell.
Yep.
You wait for it to pull back, you buy some more, it rises, you sell.
Mm-hmm.
It pulls back. And sometimes you buy it at a lower price. Sometimes you buy it at a higher price.
Yep. And sometimes you can short it, too, as it goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so,
make money going back down, too.
Yeah. And so in that $10 swing, where somebody bought it on January 1st for $30 and they sold it on June 30th or whatever the dates are for $40, they're thrilled that they made $10 or 33% on their money. And yet what they overlook is that there's a whole bunch of move opportunities in there that you could have been in and out on many, many times and made more than $10. And people here, they're like, no, that's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
Go, yeah. That is possible.
Yeah.
Well, but again, don't listen to us. We're two guys that haven't worked for years. We have no idea what we're talking about.
I mean, it's easy, right? If you don't believe that it's possible, you can just go back and look at the charts and you look at the movements of these prior IPOs. And if you don't want to go back, you know, pay attention to Lyft going forward.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see it's going to move around a lot.
One of the, right? And I don't remember what episode it was on. One of the early episodes, one of the quote-unquote homework assignments we gave to people was to go pick 12 companies that move around. Actually, pick two portfolios of 12 companies each. In the first portfolio, pick really stodgy, boring companies that don't move around a lot. Yeah, it could be anything from a Kimberly-Clark to a Procter & Gamble. I mean, maybe take like a GE, although lately that's been moving around a lot. But just something where you'd be, if I said, hey, you got to drop a big chunk of money in there and you can't touch it for 10 years or 5 years, you know, where would you be willing to poke your money on a stock? And whatever that company would be, find 12 of those. And then in a separate portfolio, a separate list, come up with another 12 names that you think move around quite a bit. And whatever move around quite a bit to you means, that's fine. You kind of figure it out as you go. And what you do is pick any company, whichever one it is, assign it a month and give each one of them a different month. So one stock's assigned to January, another one to February, another one to March, et cetera, all the way through December. Then assign each one a year and you pick the year. And you can pick same year for some, it doesn't matter, but just go back and pick a year. And so now you've picked the company, you've picked the month, and you've picked the year. So we had no influence on this at all. And what you do now is go to finance.yahoo.com, key in the ticker for that company. And the ticker is the 1 to 5 letter code that the stock market uses to reference that particular company.
You know what's easy is if they can go to just a chart and go to the big chart, you know, like look at a monthly chart. Are you looking at a monthly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could do
just
that.
Go look at the high low of that month.
That's true. That's an easy way to do it,
too. Easier than, yeah. And then the other instructions go to Yahoo. But if you can pull up a chart, okay, it doesn't have to be, you know, any, as long as a chart that can show you high low of the month.
Yep.
Right? And go to that, go to any of that month that you're picking.
Yep.
And for that stock, that year.
Find the high spot, find the low spot.
Mm-hmm.
and then subtract those two numbers. And whatever that difference is, that's how much the stock moved. So if the stock got a high, had a low of 70 or a low of 60 and a high of 70, that says it had a $10 range in the month. And now take that $10 and divide it into the low price. So if you, and you'll never do this, but had you been just pure lucky enough, you didn't hit, it, you get better odds of hitting the lottery. But so you happen to buy the stock at 60 that month, and you happen to sell it at 70 that month. So you made $10, you'd have made ballpark 15% on your money. You are never going to do that. We're not suggesting that. What that points to is to say that there's $10 or 15% of movement opportunity. And you're never going to catch all 15% of it. It's never going to happen. But is it realistic to catch 2 or 3 or 4 or 5% of those 15? So you'll never get in at the bottom. You'll never get out at the top. You just want a piece out of the middle of it. But regardless of that, go look at those companies and you'll be stunned at the range of movement that exists on those. You think, wow, in that example, the stock went from 60 to 70. That's a 15% price movement in a month. And the question is, can you catch a chunk of it? And if you can, terrific. And you'll learn how to do that again and again and again and again. You're never trying to stick around to get the 15%. But the point is that there's enough volatility in there, you can make a really comfortable living once you know what you're doing.
Yeah, and it takes time. It takes work to be able to recognize that movement. But, you get to the point where, you know, you have enough experience, you're going to love the results. You're going to love your ability to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. That's time freedom.
That requires...
And it's totally worth it. Totally worth the...
That is no tenants.
The little work that you put in over the years.
So did you and I speak? Yeah, we spoke earlier today when the market was open, I believe. Mm-hmm. Right? When you called, you were out in the backyard. Mm. And what was I was in the house. I don't know what I was doing. You probably heard me banging around in the kitchen. Mm. Getting something to eat. Chatted for a little bit. I don't remember if we spoke about a trade or about a setup. I don't think we did, but I can't remember. But there's been times that we have. You know, you may or may not. Sometimes you get in and out on the day. Sometimes you're in and out for a few days, a few weeks. But it takes you minutes during the day. And you're going out just leading the life that you lead during the day. Almost what other people do on a Saturday, you do on a Monday through Friday, hanging out in the house. Mm-hmm. And so when people talk about financial freedom, it's laughable when you compare it to time freedom.
Yeah, and you know, you don't need an IPO to do this.
No, not at all. Yeah. I was trading text messages. I'm going to have lunch with a guy tomorrow. What time did you shower today?
Today, in the morning.
So you did when the market was open?
Yeah.
3 o'clock.
Oh, you did?
And so I've got lunch with this guy tomorrow. We're going to some ramen place in Gardena. Oh,
okay. 3 o'clock?
That was when I got in the shower. He said something, so we're going to meet at, I don't know, whatever time it is, 1:30 tomorrow. And I said, oh, you're going to make me shower early. And he responded back and he said, I'm still in my pajamas, right? And it's 3 o'clock. I said, yeah. I said, I said, showering and brush my teeth. I've only done one today. But that's what this affords you to do, is once you get the concept of this, and it's a bitch of a learning curve. It's no worse than anything else, but it's real easy to do because it's easy just to push the keys on the keyboard, but it takes a long time to figure out when to push the keys on the keyboard and why to push the keys. But that's what you get to with this. We totally get off the topic of an IPO.
No, not at all. I think what I'm going to tie it in is, the important thing to remember is that, remember we talked about the IPO app, mm-hmm. right? Is that you don't need the IPO app to do well in the stock market.
No, not at all.
Right. And again, it's an app, and it's your choice whether you want to use that app if you have it installed, right? So, you know, you want to have it installed, then you know how to handle any IPO situations, okay? Because you got Uber coming up, Airbnb, you know, some other popular names like Pinterest.
Yep.
Right.
Now, Chris, would you be okay if you never traded Pinterest or Airbnb or Uber or Lyft or whomever it is?
Correct. As long as there's other names that I can trade.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
The key thing is, you know, the exercise that Chris mentioned, it's going to help you see that there's so many volatile names. There's so much movements. You know, for those of you guys that are excited about, a few percentage returns in the year, you know, you're going to be blown away. Yeah. Okay.
It's sadly comical.
Yeah.
People they haven't looked. It's never been explained to them this way. Mm-hmm. If you would just open your eyes and take a look, like, oh my gosh, they're right. There's a lot of volatility. The question becomes, how do I learn how to grab it? Right? How do I know when to buy, when to sell, and what to buy or what to sell? You can learn all that. But the idea is to understand, as you said, the app on what it is that you're actually trying to do.
And having the operating system in place, though.
That's exactly it. All right. What else should we cover on IPOs?
I think we talked about, you know, just apply the same thinking across. It doesn't have to, you know, be about Lyft. Yeah. Use that same mindset.
Well, change it to any other IPO, but really change it to any other stock.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's a Lyft or an Uber or a Facebook that came out a few years ago or whatever it is. Doesn't matter. It's the same concept. But we're looking to do that from one perspective on volatile names for a portion of the portfolio and doing that same concept on stodgy names for another portion of the portfolio. You know, you think of what Buffett does, right? He goes out and without buying a company outright, he takes a very large dollar position into a company. So he owns 5 or 7% or something like that of Apple, right? Which is billions and billions of dollars. He finds the spot where he thinks it's of value and he parks the money and then he goes back and he reads. Right? Were you telling me the story? I think a buddy of ours, he was interviewed last week. I don't know if you saw this story. They were asking him about something related to Apple and he brought out his phone and it was a Samsung flip phone that you could buy on eBay for like $30. And as he took it out, he said, I think it was Becky Quick or whomever was interviewing him. He said, did you hear the story?
I read some. They just mentioned that, but I didn't get the details.
So they brought it out and they kind of teased him. And he said, yeah, Alexander Graham Bell loaned this and I forgot to give it back to him. For those of you that don't know, Alexander Graham Bell is the guy that invented the telephone.
Yeah.
You know, 150 years ago or however long, ago it was. So just shows, you know, you don't need a smartphone to be able to do this.
Yeah.
You can use it truly as a phone with no smart.
Mm-hmm.
But what he does is he buys into the company and then sits back and lets the company do its thing.
Yeah.
And you can do the same thing. So there's from a money management standpoint, it kind of ties into this. If you'd like to know more about how we handle money management, go to the webpage for the podcast, investingfromthebeach.com. Midway down on the front page, I think I'm not going to click up on the webpage here, but there's a picture of Chris and I, and you'll see the latest podcast episode. And as you scroll down a little bit there, it says click here for free audio or something like that. And we don't ask for your email address, just click and listen. And it's about a 15-minute discussion. Chris didn't want to join me on this one, so it's just me talking into the mic. I give an overview without going into technical terms about money management and just a different way to think about managing your dollars. So you've got, you know, one bucket of money that has one purpose, another bucket of money that has another purpose, a third bucket of money and a fourth bucket of money with different purposes. And yet the entry and exit criteria of what we look for to get in or get out of a position are all the same, but it's the purposes of the bucket of money that are different. And that's explained in that audio. And there's no comic relief from my, what do you call it, from my co-host there. And just me talking, just being boring. So drink some coffee before you listen.
It's a good piece. If you guys go to take a look what Chris talked about on the money management, it's actually extremely valuable component of the operating system for trading.
Have you listened to it?
To the
audio?
Do you explain it? No, yeah. I have not.
Oh yeah, it's great. It's great. Have you listened to it?
I know what it is, man.
Yeah, you know what it is. That's true.
Yeah, just like people tell me, you know, some of these podcast episodes, I have not listened to them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you talk it, and then I go in and I edit it. Because a couple times, you know, if the listener, you may not realize it, sometimes Chris and I throw a little, I guess the term would be throw shade at one another. We'll throw a little shit at one another every now and then, and it gets a little inappropriate, so I have to go in there and cut it out, or the hiccups or whatever else happen. But for the most part, probably 98, maybe 99.7% of it gets left in. But every once in a while, I get a little doozy in there. I think Bruce Lee was the most recent one that I cut out. So what else? What else should we cover?
Regarding IPOs?
Yeah.
Maybe one important thing is how kind of watch, I think, you know, as you learn more about investing, trading in the stock market, the big picture is the stock market itself. So as these IPOs come out, pay attention to how the market treats it. How you know, do the market sell off on these guys, you know, over the next 6, 12 months, 18 months? Take a look and kind of tell you, what the general market looks like.
Well, there's an example of that. You got Snapchat, right? So Snap came out probably a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. Came out at about, I don't remember, $20, $18, something like that.
Yep.
And now I think, last time I looked, I think they're trading at about 10.
Yes.
And so you think, wow, this, you know, these guys were set to be, you know, something huge. They came out and the stock has now taken a 50% haircut.
Yeah.
And so people that come out and say, oh, you're always buying into an IPO because it always goes up. Baloney. Mm-hmm. Right, you tend to forget about those. We pay attention. Oh, Facebook's gone up 5, 6, 8-fold, whatever the price rise has been. Yeah. Tesla doing the same thing. Yeah. But there's other names that you thought might have had great opportunity and flamed out.
Yeah, but again, who cares, right? It's not from a buying or selling, I think.
Yeah, I'm not holding these forever.
Yeah, yeah. So don't, you know, I think if you have the money management plan in place, you understand how to approach these, right? Because from our perspective, we're not looking to buy this and hold. If these things, you know, move well, they'll give you history, and then you can continue to trade it.
I guess that's an interesting way to think about it too. So if you look at using a Lyft as an example, they're an industry disruptor, right? Turning the taxi world on its head. But now you compare that to a Snapchat. Is that going to change the world? I don't think so. I could be wrong, but
it's a club.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I didn't think of it that way. So if I were going to buy Snapchat, I'd be looking to trade it if it moved enough. But it's not something that I would put a couple dollars on there because, and even if I thought I was going to run to the sky, I'm not doing it to run to the sky. I'd be doing it like what you were saying if I thought it was had the opportunity to disrupt an industry. And I didn't think it did. And who knows? I don't know enough about it to know if it will, but based on current price, I haven't looked at it in a while. Last time I saw it, I think it was like 10, 12 bucks. I don't know what it is these days. Maybe it's sitting at 40 and I don't even know about it.
It doesn't matter.
No, exactly. Exactly. But if it's worthwhile to move around, then I'll look to trade it at some point.
Yeah. You don't know because it's not moving around that well.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Or it's maybe trading too low of a price that,
Yeah, have no idea.
Yeah.
But the bigger message on that is here's a company that was very hyped up when it came public. And now it's, and again, I don't know. Last time I looked, and this was a while ago, it was down about half its price. I haven't looked recently. Maybe it's gone up. Maybe it's gone down. I have no idea. But it doesn't matter. Because if I were going to be in that one or any of them, I'm just looking to trade the movement jumping around. And that's where this gets fun. What are the pieces of wisdom? Cool. Anything else?
Nothing to add.
Very cool. So if you've got thoughts or ideas for us for an upcoming episode, if you've got comments for us or questions, either leave us a voicemail at 747 24 Beach. Easy way to remember it, on get on a 747 airplane. You can be at any, in 24 hours, you can be at any beach in the world. 747-242-3224. You can also send us an email, investingfromthebeach@gmail.com. And what else? Phone number that we know that if you'll put into place and into practice what we have talked about in this episode and prior episodes, you too can get to the point of reaching time freedom. And time freedom to us means that you got the day to yourself. You spend a small chunk of time each day, doesn't have to be every single day, managing your dollars. And the rest of the time is yours to do with as you please. And our reference point on that is, since we live on the West Coast, not too far from the beach, an easy visual for this is being able to go down to the beach any day of the week when the rest of the world is at work. We happen to talk about it on Tuesday. You go down, and if you walk down to a beach on a Tuesday and listen to the waves, they sound incredibly different than they do on a Saturday and Sunday when the rest of the world is out there enjoying them. And it's our hope that you will do what we talk about, and you too can get out there and hear those waves on a Tuesday. It's a great way to do it. As always, we appreciate you listening, and we'll speak to you next time.